Welcome to Confessions of a Sales Pro. My very special guest this week is a gentleman by the name of Richard Harris, CEO of the Harris Consulting Group in the Bay Area. Richard helps founders with go-to-market strategies, teaching sales reps how to earn the right to ask questions, which questions to ask, and when are his primary drivers. He brings over 20 years' experience to the table, having done all the roles from an SDR, an account executive, sales manager, director, VP of sales, and of course, director of sales operations to the table. His client list, very impressive, includes Zoom, Salesforce, Human Interest, Dusty Robotics, and Gainsight, and many, many more. He is also the co-founder of Surf and Sales, as well as the host of the Surf and Sales podcast. Richard lives in Northern California with his wife, Kathy, sons, Riley and Bodie, and the two Cavapoos, Lola and Luna. Richard also accomplished a book. He wrote a book, came out in February of this year. It's called The Seller's Journey. Richard, my friend, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Boy, I need to cut that intro down. You asked me to send it, and I'm like, wow, that's wordy.
that's not wordy at all. That's awesome.
I will gladly, I appreciate it. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, thanks for taking the time. I know you're busy. You've got so much going on. And on behalf of the listener, before we bounce in, just thank you, Richard, for taking the time and sharing your wisdom with us today. Greatly appreciate it.
For sure. My pleasure.
So as I read your bio, it occurred to me, and I'm sure to our listeners, you had a very successful career, man. You truly have. What made you move into a consulting role? I'm very curious. It's kind of part of your backstory. I'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. So the irony of it is I got fired. That's the fun answer. The real answer is that I was with a startup that was doing very well. They got acquired by Intel. And, you know, Intel didn't need one more sales operations guy. And so the company that I was with at the time, you know, as I say, they hugged me out the door. They gave me a healthy severance, healthy insurance package, gave me a lot of runway, knew that I had a family and mortgage and stuff. And all of a sudden, people just started asking me for help. So it never in a million years was something on my radar. I got a first client through a referral. I got a second client, which was actually Gainsight, because I sat next to the CEO of Gainsight on an airplane. And we started chatting and had a great conversation. This is when they had about 15 employees. You know, now they're a multi-billion dollar unicorn. So it really fell in my lap. It was not something strategic that I chose.
It's so interesting, and I think sometimes what's meant to be happens, right? Destiny does unfold.
That's how we looked at it.
Yeah, it's fascinating that, you know what I mean? And you look where you are now. You're hitting it out of the park.
Thank you.
So I know this about you. It's in your book, and it's all over who you are. You're a strong advocate, Richard, for mental health, and mental health specifically in sales, because sales can be a fragile career, as we know. You know, you lose a deal, you get fired, you know, lots of ebbs and flows happen to us. What was your reason for going public with your own struggles around depression? I know that's a vulnerable question, but I think we'd all love to hear your answer.
Yeah, no, I'm very vocal about it, and I've shared a lot. You can find it online of, you know, how I made depression my superpower, and like many people, you know, as my wife has told me, you know, not everybody's ready to share the story like you are. And, you know, that was a really good piece of advice from her. And I just felt like people needed to know it. And I'm, you know, as I say, I'm lucky in my depression in the sense that I've never wanted to hurt myself. I've never wanted to hurt anybody else. I just sort of had this general malaise and sadness. So when sales would go up and down, so did my depression. You know, if I was doing great, my sales were great. My depression went away. When it wasn't, you know, then my depression came back, and I kind of realized that depression kind of been a part of me all my life. It wasn't something that just happened around sales. And so I got really passionate about it. I've done a ton of therapy. I talk about that all the time, and a big advocate for whatever helps someone, you know, therapy is good. Sometimes it's a clergy person. Sometimes it's meditation. Sometimes it's weighted blankets. Like, whatever helps someone is what I support. And then over the years, I found some other people like me, and we started putting out the State of Mental Health in Sales report the last couple of years. In fact, this year's report, I just looked at it this morning. I think we're going to release it next week. So it's mid-March right now for people listening. So I'm a big fan of just supporting it and giving people that safe space to you know, give themselves some grace to understand we're all human beings.
Oh, Richard, that you gave me goosebumps. I've got to tell you. I mean, anyone that struggled with mental health concerns and issues, and in sales, as you pointed out, and we can go up and down with our month, right? I mean, that's just that makes sense, right? We're bought into what it is we're doing. We're committed. Yeah. When you lose a deal, ooh, it hurts. When you win a deal, party's on and you're buying, right? But it's a bit of a roller coaster, right? And I hear what you're saying. I think you've shown amazing resilience and courage. Those are the words that kind of came to mind as you were speaking, and trying to help people find a safe place, covered with grace and you know, a sense of belonging. I love that you're putting out the State of Mental Health and Sales. That's fantastic. There's so many of us that need that. It's truly wonderful. You must run into it a lot with, you know, at the beginning, we were talking about the work that you do with go-to-market strategies with founders, right? And some founders are like, I remember working for Apple years ago. Steve Jobs was a founder. He was a brilliant guy to be around. Some founders are good at what they invented, maybe not good at selling. What mistakes, Richard, do you consistently see founders making these days when it comes to a founder-led sales organization? You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of them. One is they try to boil the ocean. You know, that whatever they've created is amazing, right? It is just supposed to be disruptive. And they think everybody can buy it because everybody could, theoretically. However, when you're starting, you need to get very niche. You need to get to two, maybe three verticals. Because every time you go into a different vertical, one of the first questions that someone's going to ask is, so have you done something with anyone else in my vertical? And so you need those repeated stories. So I think that's the first mistake I see. I think the other mistake is that they think that sales is easy, and they forget that when you're a founder doing founder-led sales, first of all, your initial customers are usually people you're introduced to by friends and family, right? Mm-hmm. You haven't actually had to cold call somebody, and that those people are trusting the person who referred you, and they're trusting you. They're buying that founder because they know if something's wrong, they're going to talk to the founder, not a salesperson. And they forget that. They forget that they're selling themselves as much. And they get frustrated when they try to scale and bring in sales, and it can't happen as fast. Why is it so hard? Why is it harder? And it's like, because all the information that's in your head is not in the salesperson's head yet, right? And there are certain things you would know and say as a founder to a prospect that your salesperson wouldn't. You know, founders will talk about the roadmap to clients and prospects. Salespeople aren't allowed to do that. So there's lots of little things around that. And then the last one that I'll point out, and believe me, there's tons of them, is that founders think that sales is turnkey, that it's simple, and they don't realize that it's expensive. And when you go from founder-led sales to real sales, it's going to take you 18 to 24 months to get where you want to go. There's enough data out there to tell you that no, you know, your precious little baby, I promise you, is not as precious as you think it is, and not everybody's going to buy it. You have to get some validation first. So those are the ones I see the most.
They resonate for sure, and it kind of makes sense, right? It's their darling, it's their baby. They built this thing. They're passionate about it. Whatever it is, hardware, software, service, whatever, subscription, whatever it is. I love what you said about boil the ocean. I often hear that term when it comes to the concept of a CRM. Let's boil the ocean in software. Yeah. Let's see how complicated we can make this, right?
Totally.
And you also pointed out, Richard, that anyone could buy it, but the idea of focus, that's the word I wrote down while I was listening to you speak. Like, pick a couple of verticals, go after that, and do the bowling alley strategy. Knock down a few pins in the same lane, because you'll build some currency and market equity in those spaces, instead of see a bear, shoot a bear. If all you've got a hammer, everything looks like a nail, right? Instead of doing it that way, have that focus. And you're right. It's all going to be referrals first. But once you have to get into real sales, as you pointed out, that's a whole different beast. And probably a beast that the founder is not professional at or understands. So, yeah, sales is not turnkey. That's one of the things that is so important for any founder to get, that there are, it's a profession by itself. And it comes with best practices. You can hire people, but they're not. It's not going to be ever their baby. It's your baby, right? So you've got to do, you've got to invest in them, training, all those things to help pass that passion on, so that you've got a network of passionate people delivering your value proposition into the market. It's interesting, right? And when customers, you know, when companies have a hard time selling, they tend, you know, the D word, right? The discount word. Well, maybe I can get you a deal on that. It's just, it's the worst word in the world. In your book, you talk a lot about reducing the number of discounts you have to make. Can you share a few tips with the listeners, Richard, on what's that all about? Because that's a thing, right? Yeah. Discounting is everywhere.
And we shouldn't be surprised by it. Like, we know everybody's going to ask for it. And yet salespeople are so often afraid, because their leadership hasn't taught them the right way to handle it. You know, there's a couple of ways to handle it. You know, generally speaking, my first answer is, well, you know, I appreciate that you're asking. You know, my pricing's based on what the market dictates, not what someone's spreadsheet says. So how would you like to proceed? And nobody's going to be like, well, you know, whatever, goodbye. Like, they're still going to negotiate. And then they'll say, well, Richard, I just can't do it. And they're looking for you to lower the price. And I'll go, well, great. You know what? There's a couple of ways we could both leverage commercial terms to benefit us here. You know what? What I could do is, if you're willing to sign a longer contract, it's a 2% discount. If you're willing to prepay this amount, you know, 6 months, a year, 2 years, it's another 3% discount. And if you're willing to give me a quote, you know, it's another 2% discount. So now all of a sudden I've thrown out some discounts that I get something back, and I'm not throwing out 10, 15, because I know as soon as I say 15%, they're going to tell me that's not enough.
So they're going to go for 25.
Now I kept it low.
Exactly.
Now I know that. And then again, if you're doing this with your, you know, if you're selling into the enterprise and you're working with a procurement department, the procurement department doesn't need more than a 2 or 3% discount. They really don't, but they know they can hammer people for it and scare salespeople for it. So, you know, that's the basics of it. That's the basics of the script. You have to do a little bit of math behind the scenes so that when they say, well, we're going to keep looking, you know, you've got to be able to have the math that says, well, you can do that, but you're going to delay it, and it's going to cost you this much. And then you're going to go make these four people go do all this, and it's going to cost them that much, which means they also can't go do the other things they should be doing while they have this. So you got to put this sort of economic impact piece together behind the scenes. But that's the basics of the conversation I encourage people to use.
I love that it's the term, you know, market. I wrote down market aware pricing. So you didn't just build this price out of your, you know, out of your hat. This was, you've done due diligence. You've done your market research. Yeah. You know what competitive solutions bring to the table. You're in the ballpark. Yep. And I always believe in this little model. I wish I had learned it when I was a lot younger. It's called V equals B minus C. Value equals benefit minus cost. So any of you salespeople out there listening, you want to raise the value to someone, to a customer?
Yeah.
One way to make your V bigger in that equation is make your C smaller, called discounting. Yeah. What we're telling you not to do, right? Another way to do that, to make the V bigger, is bring more benefit. And to understand what they would benefit from, you need to understand their business pain, right? You have to get deep into that argument. And then you can define, as Richard pointed out, you can defend your price with some pride.
Yes.
I like how you said, get to give. Yeah, I'll give you 2%. And you're right. A purchasing guy looks like a hero. If he ground a sales guy down by 2 or 3% still looks great internally, right? But yeah. Before you give it away, get something for it. Get prepayment, get a longer commitment, get a quote, get a reference, or even a referral. Get something of sales equity back, right? That's what you're truly talking about. I'm going to have to read your book now. You just made me go crazy about a thing. So and all there's you a, listeners are probably feeling there. The same way. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's another thing about, this is, so, you know, purchasers and particularly CFOs love to throw the, give me the ROI on this, right? And ROI is such a scare tactic, you know, and I literally say, anytime someone says ROI, I say, great, I'm going to give you a number. Are you going to believe it? Because I don't think you will. Have you ever believed the number of ROI that a salesperson told you? And they're like, no. And I'm like, great. Because it's about something in the future that nobody can ever predict. But what I can tell you is that your economic impact, this goes back to your value piece, right? And the benefit, your economic impact based on the conversation I had is it's costing you this much. And my solution is, you know, only 20% of that. So if that is the ROI you're looking for, then great. But if you want to have some prediction, you know what, go for it, because I already know you're not going to believe the number. And then when I say this to them, I say, so what number do you want to talk about? The economic impact or the ROI? And they just look at me stone cold because they never had anybody say this. And this is in the book, but you know, the ROI thing is just like, it irritates me because it's such a scare tactic. And I'm like, you know, get out of here. Stop it. Go play with that with some, you know, 22-year-old who hasn't actually figured this stuff out yet, or, you know, taken training anybody. Not even me, anybody.
Anybody, it's a pencil sharpening exercise, right? That's why they're saying ROI, go sharpen your pencil, get your price down a bit, and now come back to the table. But wait a minute, why not prove it? Like Richard's talking about the economic impact, folks. What does your solution do for the business problem at hand? That's where the real love lives, right? That's the whole idea. And there's other ways to do it. And I know this is also like in parts of your book, Richard, you talk about, and this is fascinating. I know you've heard it here on a sales podcast, the words money back guarantee, baby. All right. So I got to ask, man, like you constantly in your book, you say it comes with a money back guarantee. Like shed a little light on that for us. What's that all about?
That's just me. You know, that's just me being a little snarky. You know, like I at one point I wanted to put on the cover, you know, of course this is a great sales book, sincerely Richard's mom, right? I sort of have this attitude about, you know, sales. And so I was like, well, what if, you know, everybody likes something? I'm like, you know what? I'll give people their money back. If the $12 it costs for this book and you don't get something out of it, and you want your money back, fine. I'll PayPal you or Venmo you, I'll mail you a check. I don't care. Like, it's true. I really will, because I don't want to waste someone's money. But it's also, I was thinking about it like marketing wise. I'm like, nobody's ever done that. No sales book has ever said that. And no book has ever said that. No book has ever that I know of. Right. No. And so I was just like, all right, let's put it out there and see what happens. And so, you know, nobody's asked for it back, you know, so far. You know, but I would honestly, you know, do it. And, you know, for people listening, and, you know, I try not to like overly promote the book, but it's the topic we're talking about is that literally the first sentence in the book is my email address. You don't like the book, just send it back. Just call me, you know, text me.
Well, absolutely. So listeners, you heard it here. You're all going to have to buy Richard's book because it's got a money back guarantee. And if you don't get $12 worth of value, I'll also double Richard's guarantee. You'll get $24 back. Listen to that.
Oh, wow.
Look at that. We're handing out a great deal here now. A great deal. Richard, before we let you go, and listen, my friend, this has been great. You've dropped some wisdom all over the place here. How can people best reach out to get a hold of you or get their hands on this great book we're talking about? What's the next step for the listener?
Yeah, so obviously you can get it on Amazon, The Seller's Journey. You could get it at thesellersjourney.co. You can find me on LinkedIn, Richard Harris. I'm the one with the little goofy trademark by my name. No, you can't trademark your name. It's me again, just being snarky. And then this is the part that's always crazy. You know, my phone number is 415 596-9149. It's the number we're using to have this conversation. It's a real number. Maybe text me ahead of time to let me know that's why you're calling, so I, you know, don't send it to voicemail. But yeah, I'm crazy like that.
That's fantastic. Hey, listen, Richard, thank you so much, my friend, for spending the time, sharing your wisdom, your vulnerability, and your success with the listeners today. I greatly appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you, Ian. Thank you so much for having me.
That's awesome, Richard. And thank you all for listening to Confessions of a Sales Pro.
If you have found this episode informative and helpful, we would be honored and appreciative if you would share this podcast with other great salespeople like yourself. And we look forward to you joining us for all new episodes weekly, every Thursday. Please subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If you'd like us to help you grow your sales commissions, visit us at salesmentoryou.com. Confessions of a Sales Pro. Less sins, more wins. With Ian Selby.